Hello, fellow aviators and listeners. I'm your host, DeMarco Carey, and today we have my good friend Riley on. And Riley, I'll give you a floor and give a quick introduction about who you are, how you got into aviation, and
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me on.
no problem.
Like DeMarco said, I'm Riley. I'm from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. And I got into aviation kind of when I was a kid. I was about like 8 years old, and I was really involved with like flight sims and stuff like that from a young age. I always enjoyed like if I was at a friend's house or something, they had something like that, like I would always like to like check it out and try all the different planes that were on the Sims. And eventually as a kid I ended up starting to like go to air shows that were around my area. We had one in Kitchener here, like where I'm from, and also in London. So as a kid, like I would always try to go to as many as I could and like see all the different airplanes. And then eventually I joined Air Cadets when I was about 12 years old. And through that I got a little bit more exposure of kind of flying and just aviation in general, just being around planes. The squadron I was at actually was based out of like the airport that I currently fly out of. So it was interesting always kind of going to the airport for cadets and seeing all the planes and stuff. As I grew a bit older though, I kind of ended up kind of falling out of aviation a little bit. And in high school, I just not lost interest generally, but I kind of didn't really know how getting into aviation and stuff like that would be, and if I'd be able to successfully do it. And I essentially kind of just got to a point where I was just like, I tried to kind of choose an easy job and in fear of aviation not working out, essentially. So I just went through high school kind of like, oh, I'll just find an easy job that just pays me good and I can get full time in, whatever. Essentially got out of high school with that same kind of mindset. Started working full time and realized like immediately that that wasn't the kind of lifestyle I wanted to get into. That wasn't the kind of thing I wanted to do. And basically, like in 2 seconds, I just changed my mind and was just like, no, like aviation's what I want to get into. And yeah, I can still remember I told my girlfriend about probably like 5 or 6 months into working full time that I was just like, I want to go be a pilot. I want to go do all my training and I want to get involved into this sort of thing. And it's something that I was like afraid to get into and afraid to actually be able to succeed in. And I basically just changed my mind and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna hop into aviation. I'm gonna just give it my all and see how far it takes me. And yeah, so from there I applied to an aviation college. I got in there, spent about a year there, and just the college aspect was a good experience for me. I met a lot of good people there and stuff like that. The flying just ended up being extremely slow when I went there. The location of the airport we were at was just wasn't the best as far as weather went, and yeah, didn't get a lot of flying done as much as I'd like. So I basically kind of made an executive decision to come back home and train out of the airport that's closest to where I live. And yeah, I started training there. Been there ever since. Basically, I came back, got my PPL, currently working on the CPL, and yeah, just honestly, just pursuing aviation as full as I can right now.
That's awesome from like a young age. It's and you made a good point about coming into aviation and it being really intimidating from the outside in, and all it really takes is going to the airport and signing up for a flight lesson or getting that introduction flight. But it really does help if you have people out there that can guide you and mentor you, because it is an intimidating process to start it, and it's a big investment. It's a lot of money
Oh, for
and a lot
sure.
of time.
It's definitely the family I come from hasn't ever really been involved in aviation as much. So for me, looking at it like as even like an early teenager, I wasn't really sure what the road to the airlines looked like. I wasn't really sure what pretty much any path in aviation looked like. And that was probably a big thing for me that scared me at first, was just not really knowing like what was going to happen when I got into aviation. And yeah, like once I got in and stuff, it made a whole lot of sense, like how everything worked and kind of the way things went. But I think that a lot of people at the beginning are can be very like intimidated by it and not 100% sure like what they're gonna have to do. And it's definitely a struggle to get into, but I mean, if you have the passion for it, like it's been worth it since I've got into this.
Oh yeah, 100%. It doesn't seem like it's a job, you know. It's you're doing something that you
No.
love. It's fun, and that's all that matters. So I want to touch on. You said you did the what was that group you were a part of when you were younger was Canadian Aviators.
I was in the Air Cadets. So
Okay.
we basically it was kind of a mix of everything. So in the Air Cadets, you do a good amount of stuff is based around aviation, but they teach you a lot of like leadership, stuff like that. It's kind of like you're like junior military. Like you're basically like setting yourself up for a pathway where you could technically enter the military from that if you like it and stuff like that, and if it's something you'd want to do. But there's also a little like aspects about it where, I mean, we're at the airport, so we got to meet a good amount of people. We had a few times where like the CF-18 fighter pilots would fly into the airport, and then they would take the time to actually meet us and stuff. We have like a demonstration team here too called the Snowbirds, and they flew in for a few air shows, like at the beginning when I was in cadets, and they would kind of come over to the squadron and come talk to us and stuff. And you get the exposure through that for sure, and it was definitely interesting, and like you learn a lot coming out of it and stuff like that. And it was a good step for me, and it was a good kind of way to get out to the airport and see kind of what goes on and all the different planes. Being in that entire atmosphere too is just amazing, just always being surrounded by planes and stuff. And that definitely like as a kid, I remember that definitely like hooked me on like wanting to be a pilot at that age.
Yeah, no, I as a kid too, I was surrounded by aviation. We have something similar to that. It's called Civil Air Patrol. My little brother did it. I never got into it, but it's similar, you know, it's like a military track. They teach you about leadership. You can get involved in aviation. I know you can get your private actually paid for as a
Yeah.
kid. I wish I would have done that, but yeah, as a kid I never really thought about it because I always thought it was this esoteric, like geniuses only were pilots, and I looked up to my dad, who's one, and I was just like, I could never do that. And it's interesting when you talk to other people when you're on the other side of aviation, you're not on the outside in. You're like, oh, it's so easy, just start.
Oh
And I
yeah.
think people, they're like, oh, this guy's full of it, you know?
Yeah, and I feel
But
like too, like the one thing I definitely learned, because I ended up taking kind of the harder route where I just decided to settle in life. And like what really switched me over is I remember I was like sitting at home one night and I came across this like motivational video basically about how like everybody has these gifts, and it's your choice whether you like use them to your advantage and you use the gifts that you have and the strengths that you have in life that make you good for certain jobs, or you don't, basically. And like that was a big eye opener for me. And I was just sitting there like, I only get like one life. I only get one shot at this. And you know what I mean? I didn't want 30 years to go by and just sit there and be like, wow, I missed like a huge opportunity to get involved in that. And you know, wake up and go to a job every day that didn't feel like a job, instead of having to wake up and go to something that I didn't want to do. And that was a big turning point for me, I think. And honestly, ever since I got into aviation, every time I go to the airport, it never feels like, you know, you're training. It just feels like fun, and it feels like, you know, you're progressing every single time you go out, 'cause you're always learning so many new things.
oh yeah, definitely, 100%. I definitely feel you on that one. So, with your training, being from the United States and you being up in Canada, how did your training all start? What does it look like, the path? I mean, I believe it's pretty similar for an American to start flying, but what's the path of you are completely outside of aviation, you want to get in and you want to start flying? And what was the path that you took to just get your flying started, and how has your training been?
So for me, it was somewhat different than it was for some other people. So having gone up to an aviation college, I spent about a year there, and I got all my ground school done in that year that I was there, and I had actually started, I did a few flights while I was up there in my like second term. So I got my ground school, all that stuff, which is typically where everybody starts. You get your ground school, you get like a radio license and stuff like that. Like you do the test for that, which isn't too bad. For me, when I came back down to the airport here, Kitchener-Waterloo International, I came back down here and I was able to just transfer what I'd done in ground school, up at school, like up at the college I was at, just down into here. And so they got me in a plane pretty much right away. And yeah, from there, basically, you start your PPL training. I think the PPL stuff is pretty standard, like in Canada and the States. Except we don't get our night ratings through our PPL. So you basically you get, you know, all your hours done. You do your flight test. You do your written. Like all that stuff gets out of the way. And then once you get your private license, you can only fly in the day. And the night rating isn't combined with that. So once I was finished my private license, I basically had to do, I don't even remember how many hours it was. It's not a ton of
I think we
hours.
only have to do five.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's not a lot of hours. You go up with an instructor, you do stuff like that, and then you got to do a bunch of like solo hours, which we basically just have to do like circuits until we get all of our hours done. So yeah, you basically get your night rating. Once you have that, you kind of have a choice. So once you get that done, you have your PPL and your night rating. You can either do your multi and your IFR, which here they normally like to combine that. Like they like to get you to do your multi and IFR at the same time, sort of thing. Like you do one and then the other right away. Or you do like your commercial license, which a lot of people I know choose like the CPL route first and then they'll get their multi IFR and finish it that way. But yeah, so that's how we do it here. I ended up choosing the CPL route first, so I'm currently working on that. And once that's done, I'll be doing like my multi IFR and like finishing all those ratings up. So
Yeah, and I know when I was on your podcast, I had said that I was doing my instrument first and then commercial. And I know some flight schools out here will combine the instrument and commercial, but
yeah.
traditionally you do your instrument first on the civilian flying side. But what's some challenges that you faced in your training from your private and now with your commercial?
That's a pretty good question. So one thing I will say, like just to start out with that, is I did do some flying when I was up in that aviation college. So I had an instructor.
Sorry, my dog just freaked out.
Yeah, no worries, man, no worries. Yeah, so I had an instructor up there. He was a really good guy. We clicked pretty good, but I ended up only having a few flights. So I had about, I think, maybe 4 or 5 flights when I was up there, and then I ended up just coming home. So when I started down here, I got an instructor right away. I was flying. The instructor that I had, we didn't click as well as I had with the guy up north, and I ended up basically about I think it was about like maybe 3 months into my training with him, I ended up switching instructors. So that was a challenge because I had to get used to a whole new instructor and whatever, and kind of like, you know, see what his kind of style of flying was and how like his standards of how he wanted his students to be and whatnot. So that was definitely a challenge for me, just adapting to that. And honestly, once I got that going, like once I met the guy and I had my instructor down here and stuff, it was pretty good. We clicked right away, and the flying started getting easier because I found that him and I just had really good like chemistry together and stuff. Another thing too that was a bit of a challenge was I was flying a different plane up north. So the flight school that I was at when I was in college, they had a plane from the Czech Republic that isn't super common, like pretty much in North America in general. And coming back down here where I live, we were flying like 172s and stuff. So I spent basically a year trying to get used to flying this other plane, and then I came back down and we're flying 172s. So that was a kind of a new thing to get used to. And other than that, I feel like it's a lot of just like personal things too. Like when you're going through all your training, you're always kind of like trying to make yourself better, and it's like you against yourself because you're always like mentally just pushing yourself and trying to just teach yourself as much as possible. And I think that was definitely a big thing, is just like always trying to push myself harder and like realizing that, every time you go flying, you're gonna learn new things, and that's not a bad thing. And I think that a lot of students, when they come into flying and when they start out, it's like you make mistakes right away and you kind of beat yourself up for it. And if you can't do something properly, you're frustrated about it. But one thing that's good about kind of just like basically trying to talk yourself through all your training and stuff is just the realization that if I make mistakes while I do my flying, if I do anything that, I wish I would have done better, there's always another flight that you can work on that. And, you learn something new every time. And that's honestly what makes flying good, is always being able to learn new things, always being able to like grow as a pilot and, not always have perfect flights and be able to come back and always try to perfect something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I at the beginning of my private pilot training, I definitely struggled a lot. And I remember I was like 30 hours, 40 hours in, and I just couldn't grasp the concept of landings. I don't know. I was probably, gripping the yoke too hard or not using trim and flaring at the proper time. But eventually one day it just clicked, and I had those flights where I would go home and I just felt awful, and it was a silent car ride. But you just got to keep pressing through those bad flights, because eventually you're gonna have a win. You're gonna have that day where you're like, "Oh, it's all worth it." But
Yeah, for
you just
sure.
got to keep pressing. And even my dad's been flying for over 20 years, and he tells me, "Hey, dude, some days I have awful landings, and I've been flying for 20 years."
Yeah.
So it's never gonna end. It's just all about how you rebound, and that's just life in general.
Oh, for sure. And it's all about just like the visualization too. Like I've definitely had a few flights where, you come in, you don't land as well, and like you kind of go home and like you think about it. Like it's on your mind. You're like, how did I not land as well as I wanted to? Like, what did I do wrong? What should I have done, instead to make the landing softer or to do whatever? And like sometimes I find that like positively visualizing what you need to do next time can even change that. Like I've had a few flights where, I've gone up, had a bad landing, and then like say 2 days later I have a flight booked again. And between those 2 days, it's like I'm thinking about, okay, like when I come in on approach next time, like what do I need to improve? What do I need to go in and do to make sure I don't make the same mistake as last time? And that can help a lot of the time too, is you come in, you're on approach now, and it's like, hey, just keep that in mind that we need to do this differently or whatever. And definitely I think watching videos too, that's always really helpful, is when you watch other people do it, sometimes you just see like their tendencies that you could definitely like improve and perfect to make your flying better.
Yeah, I have this saying. My instructor gave it to me. He would always tell me, "Don't drive feet alive," because I would always lock up on the yoke and not move my feet. And we would catch like a crosswind, and that would throw us off our course. And then just from there, it would all tumble downhill, and then I would get even tenser. And it really helped me out by just keeping like with my landings, just keeping 3 fingers on the yoke. And if it got too heavy, keep trimming out and keep just moving my feet. Like really small inputs, almost just tapping the rudders. So if I did catch, a crosswind, I could put in that proper rudder correction, and that really helped me. That little phrase, "Don't drive feet alive," it just constantly reminded me to not lock up, don't get all tense, keep my feet moving so I can put those rudder inputs in. And yeah, that was something that helped me a lot, and my landings improved dramatically from there. But I mean, I'm not perfect yet, but so are you, what's your plan career-wise? What are you're 21, correct?
Yeah,
20, 21?
I'm 21 right now. Honestly, COVID is definitely taking a big hit on the industry for sure. I'll definitely say that to start. So I got lucky enough a few months ago to basically land a job as a groomer at a medevac company that's at the airport that I fly out of. And seeing that side of flying and stuff has definitely been interesting. And with COVID and stuff, they've still been flying pretty regularly. So, like business has been busy there, seeing kind of that side of things. But honestly, like as a goal right now for kind of the future, once I'm done my training, I mean, I'll fly anything that for sure with the way the industry is right now. Like Medevac would be a pretty fun career to get into. Instructing would be good to get into. I'm happy in an airplane, and whatever job can provide me an airplane to fly and get paid for is something that I'd be happy to do every day. And yeah, I mean, my end goal in aviation is definitely to land a job at an airline and just honestly just explore the world, and just kind of see what's out there and be able to fly to different places and stuff. But for right now, I definitely like the line, like, beggars can't be choosers, and that's definitely kind of how
Yeah.
the industry I've seen at least has been going right now. So I'd be
And
happy with
definitely this
it.
last year.
Sorry?
I said definitely this past
Oh
year.
yeah, for sure. It's changed so fast and so drastically that it's just it's crazy, honestly. Like, I never thought it would end up kind of going this direction, but you know, I think it's caught everybody off guard and stuff. But honestly, yeah, any aviation career right now that'll take me on and, you know, get me into a plane, that's hopefully where I'm headed once all my training and stuff is done. And yeah, I'd be thankful, honestly, for anything.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And the industry has definitely taken a hit. It for sure has. I flew back from San Antonio on American, and I was talking with a guy that was taking a flight out to DCA to pick up a jet and go to Grand Forks. He works for Piedmont. He's just like, yeah, man, it's tough, and it's not going to get any easier, and it will get better, but we're just in the midst right now. But he was telling me. He was like, this is the perfect time to be getting into aviation because there's going to be a boom and
Yeah.
they're going to need pilots. And you just got to stick it through. It's cyclical. This stuff does happen. I mean, if you look back in history, 2008, when the stock market crashed out here in the States, the airlines fell through.
Yeah.
And then 9/11, it fell through. So it's cyclical. But I mean, you can't beat flying for a job. You really can't.
Oh, for sure. And honestly, yeah, like it's happened before and the airlines have recovered, and I mean, you know, it's definitely a grind right now, but it's just something that if you keep pushing through and you don't give up, like, we'll get there eventually. And you know, honestly too, even without COVID, it's a good grind on its own, just getting to this point, but it's definitely worth it at the end of the day. And it's just about not, like, losing hope, because you're right. Like, the at the beginning when this happened too, I definitely thought about this. I was just like, you know, all these small businesses are taking hits right now, like, you know, our industry's taking hits, so many others are taking hits, but it's like everybody being kind of like locked at home, and you know, you can't go out, you can't do the normal stuff that you would do. It's like once everybody's out of this, everything that we couldn't do, people are going to want to do. So it's like that includes traveling, like everything's going to take like a pretty big boom again. And just, you know, I can see the airlines still getting back to where they were like a year and a half ago. And it's all a matter of time, right? It's like once things do go back to normal at some point, and we might be in a good position too once we're done our training, that we might be, you know, a bit closer to that point where we can get a job right away. And hopefully, you know, by the time we're eligible to apply to the airlines, we'll be in a good position.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, my trajectory is looking like I should be taking my instrument check ride in late April, early May, and then this summer working on the commercial. And I most likely will do my CFI, and I might do my multi before my CFI. However, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to do anything but CFI because all the other aerial survey jobs and pipeline patrol, they're all taken up by people that were doing those jobs to get to the airlines. Now the airlines isn't hiring, so they're all kind of just sitting in limbo.
Yeah, for sure. And
But
nothing's guaranteed right now, which is tough too. It's like
yeah.
just honestly trying to get a foot in the door is the most ideal thing right now. And you know, it's I mean, I think instructing is still pretty good. And you know, like I said,
Yeah, and it teaches you a lot.
yeah, for sure. You definitely get to, like, I feel like it's an awesome feeling being able to take a student who's like fresh into aviation and being able to just teach them all this stuff and just watch them, you know, like knock all the goals they had off and just keep progressing through their career.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you can also be that instructor that maybe your instructor didn't possess some qualities that you wish they would have, and you can be that change that you want to see, and be that leader that you wanted during your flight training.
Yeah, for sure. 'Cause there's always things that, when you have your instructor and stuff that, you wish that they would do certain things differently. You wish that they would, kind of teach you stuff in a different way. And it definitely gives you that opportunity once you become an instructor to teach students the way that you like would have hoped you could have been taught, and it definitely can change someone's like aviation perception. When they come in and they haven't done a lot of flying, I think I've seen both sides for sure. Like I've seen instructors who have kind of ruined students' perceptions just on the way that they teach, and I've also seen people who have just gotten instructor and excelled right away just through like how the instructor teaches. So they definitely play like a huge part in, someone who's just really new to aviation coming in and trying to, grind it out and figure out how this whole thing works.
Yeah, no, 100%. I've flown with, I believe, five or six different instructors, and all of them have their different techniques on how to teach, and one isn't better than the other, but I mean, everybody learns different, and you just have to find your right instructor. And I think one thing that the biggest thing that I did wrong was I was not picky about the flight school that I started out at, and then my instructors as I went through, and people forget that they're the customer and they have the power. And if you don't like, you and your CFI aren't meshing well, or you don't feel like they're putting in enough effort, as a customer, you should, and as a student pilot, with your best interest in mind, do what you believe is right. And obviously, get input from other people if you have a mentor, but you have to be your biggest advocate for yourself. And if you don't think that you and your instructor are meshing well, then definitely my advice would be to go with what your heart and gut is telling you and switch it up.
Oh, for sure. And I can speak on that personally too. Like I said earlier too in the podcast, like when I came into the flight school that's closest to like where I grew up and stuff, I had an instructor where it wasn't that he was a bad guy or anything like that. It was just that we didn't click together. Like our personalities didn't go together. We didn't have that chemistry when we were flying and stuff like that. And you're 100% right. Like as the customer, as the student who's trying to learn and trying to progress yourself as far as you can get, you want to get the most out of an instructor and be able to learn the most. And if you have those like indifferences between you, it's not a bad thing. And it happens, right? Like every humans have that naturally. Like not everyone's going to get along. And when you have that with an instructor, it's not a bad thing to try to find an instructor that's going to click with you better. And I think that that's something that isn't really talked about as much in aviation as it should be and made kind of normal is that, it's okay to switch instructors halfway through. Like you don't have to always have the same instructor. If you mesh and everything's good, like I know people who've just had the same instructor from the start to finish and, they've had a really good experience with them. And, that's so awesome to have as a student. But it's also not a bad thing if you go through it and, your instructor isn't exactly what you'd want in an instructor and you decide to change it up and get a new one.
Yeah, no, yeah, I definitely agree with that. I started out at a flight school and I wasn't meshing well with the instructor, and then I went to another flight school and I really enjoyed my flight instructor that I had, and everything was going good. Then COVID hit and he left and he went to California. I got a new instructor, but it all worked out. And but yeah, no, you have to be your biggest advocate. You definitely have to be your biggest advocate. So with your flying, with your commercial flying, how does that track go? Where are you at in your training? Are you projected to do your check ride in the upcoming future? How is that going for you?
So pretty much right now, once I got my night rating done, I enjoyed my flying a little bit first. Like one thing I will say too before I go into that is just like when you get your private license, when you get your night rating or whatever, it's always good to take like even just like a week to 2 weeks at like minimum to just go out and like enjoy flying before you get into like that next stage and just like fly around, take some people up, actually like fully enjoy aviation and, not feel like you're fully like training every time you go up. So for me, I took a few like weeks off once I got all that stuff done, and then I started out in my commercial, and my instructor, I really liked the way my instructor did it with me basically. So he took me up and he just showed me in about two flights, I think it was, just like everything they look for on your CPL flight test. So he would like demonstrate to me like what had changed from PPL to CPL as far as like the standards go and what they want to see. And then he would be like, "Hey, now you do it." Like, for example, like steep turns or something. He would just show me the difference and then get me to do it. And then I would do it until I did it the way he would say that they would like be grading you like well at. Once I did it that standard, he'd be like, "Okay, we'll move on to the next one." And we did a bunch of that, and we just went over everything. And then a big part of the CPL is getting like your hours built up. So you got to do, I think it's 20 hours like cross country. So the biggest thing he did with me is he showed me all that stuff, and he showed me kind of what they're going to expect. And then he was like, "Okay, now that you have all this, like start making bookings for yourself, go do all your time building." And then he's like, "Once you have your like all your cross countries done, and we also have to do, I don't know what you guys have to do, I feel like it's probably the same, but you have to do a 300 nautical mile flight."
Yeah, it's something around
Yeah,
that.
so we have to do that as well for like to get our CPL. So he was basically just like, build your hours, do your 300 nautical mile, get all of that stuff out of the way, and then he's like, "We'll continue the last bit of our training so that everything is just like perfect, you know, we will go and critique everything that needs work, and then you'll do your flight test basically." Which I thought was extremely smart to do, because at the same time, like if you do all that training first and then build your hours and then go from building hours to your test, like
Gonna be
you're
rusty.
gonna be a bit rusty because you haven't done the stuff as recently as you probably would have liked. So I definitely like the way that I'm going through and doing it right now. And yeah, I'm hoping we're projecting right now, hopefully that I'll be done like my stuff and onto my flight test by hopefully April or May. The
Okay.
weather's been getting a bit better up here in Canada, so I've been trying to honestly just go and do cross countries on every good day we get. And just honestly, one thing I've been trying to do too is just see like new places. And that's definitely one thing I would encourage like anybody out there that's doing their training, is when you're doing cross countries, when you're doing stuff like that, like challenge yourself. And you know, there's times where you'll want to go back to the same place and whatever, and just because it feels comfortable, you've been there, like you know the airport, all that stuff. But definitely what I would say is really fun is just challenge yourself and just, you know, pick a random airport that you know like people have been to before, and just be like, "I'm just gonna fly there and you know see how it goes, and you know see what that airport's like, and kind of explore a new place and stuff." So that's definitely been a cool thing for me right now as I've been building my hours, is that every time I go and do a cross country, I choose a new place. And just, you know, it's always a learning experience, and it's always fun dealing with like different airspace, different airports, different stuff like that. And it's definitely been a good journey right now, but I'm hoping at least before the summer to have the CPL test done, and somewhere in between there get the written exam done as well.
Nice. Yeah. So with my training, it's a little different. So in the States, do you guys do Part 61, Part 141? Is that how your guys' training works? Like you have a standardized versus non-standardized training?
I don't believe so.
So in the States, I did my private under Part 61. So there's not much regulation and
Okay.
like standard to it, as in you have to do this lesson this day. But now, I switched over to a flight school that's through a
Okay.
university. So I go to Liberty University now, and I do my classes online, then I go to a flight training affiliate, which is just a flight school out
Okay.
here, and I do all my flying with them, but I have to meet certain standards every lesson. So that and I have to have my check ride done and my written done by the end of the semester. So that's one thing I like about doing a university compared to just your regular flight school is I know when I have to have things done by and there's a deadline. So it pushes me to study more and like it keeps me very on the straight and narrow goal-oriented mindset
Yeah.
'Cause with my private, I felt like I got very lackadaisical, and I'm like, oh, I'll study tomorrow, you know, or I'll study next week. I don't need to study this week.
Yeah, so
And have you developed like a study plan for yourself, or like a regimen of you get up and you study from X amount of hours and you fly at least 3 times a
yeah,
week?
so one thing, and just to touch on it too, we do actually have the standardized stuff and like non-standardized stuff. So like our universities pretty much like universities and college are pretty similar to like what you were saying there that you have to go through and stuff. Yeah, with the training and stuff. So one thing I did find, having been up like doing like an aviation college and then doing it like more standalone where you're like just out of flight school and stuff, I've definitely like I've been able to see both sides of how it works and stuff. So definitely the like being in a school and stuff, it's more structured, and I definitely find that everything is definitely it's more like a crunch time sort of thing, you know, like you have to get everything done by a certain point, and by the end of a semester you're expected to have like so many hours, all that stuff. It definitely becomes harder when you like when you're doing it by yourself and you're not kind of more in that structured school system and stuff. So one thing I've definitely had to develop through all of this is just like yeah,
Time
time
management.
management,
Yeah.
just like self-monitoring, like seeing how am I studying, you know, what are things that, you know, I'm not understanding, what are things I need to fix? Like it's a lot of like self-coaching in a sense, which definitely has its pros and it has its cons. It's definitely good because you kind of learn to be extremely like independent as far as your flying goes, and you know you're relying on just yourself to basically get yourself through everything. So yeah, I've definitely with my CPL, I've at least been trying to do like I use like an online testing site basically called Pilot Exams that we have in Canada. And it basically just generates like a bunch of like mock tests for you that you can do for like a bunch of your ratings, including your CPL and also your PPLs on there as well. And I basically just been doing as many questions on that as I can, and at the same time like reading all of our textbooks we can buy, stuff like that. And I definitely do hold myself to a certain standard, so I try to at least do 2 to 3 like 80 question tests a day if I can between like work and stuff like that, just so that I'm always like, you know, pushing myself to do questions and prepare myself. A lot of reading too, for sure. It's important, I think, to go and look at like a lot of like the finer print stuff, because a lot of the books can generalize things. And one thing that's good when you're studying is just, you know, if you get a question wrong, and I find I do this a lot personally, I don't know how many other people like do the same thing, but if I get a question wrong, like I really research in depth like why that was the wrong answer that I chose or whatever, and you know what makes the other question right and stuff like that. And I kind of do the research on, you know, where I messed up, so that when I go back and do that question again, like I've already done my learning and my research on it to not make the mistake again. And I find that that definitely helps the studying go by a bit easier, because you know at first you take the time to really go through each question, and then once you've learned it more, it's a lot easier to just go through and, you know, do every question and just keep learning. I think is definitely a big thing to have on your mind, is like always just keep like, you know, thinking about different things, thinking about different questions and asking questions. Like, I've definitely been lucky working in this medevac company, that I'm surrounded by mechanics and stuff like that. And, you know, they're working on bigger planes that aren't just a lot of general aviation stuff. So if I have questions, I normally go in and I'm like really trying to ask them, like, what does this do? You know, like, how does this work? And just asking questions is so important, even with your instructor. Like I message my instructor a lot and just bug him with questions. And you know, you might feel like you're being annoying when you do that sort of stuff, but it's always good to ask questions. And you know, never just like keep it to yourself if you're unsure of something. Always try to figure it out. Always try to, you know, push yourself to expand your knowledge and just learn more.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. With your, so I know you brought up earlier, this just came into my mind. you played flight sim as a kid. Do you still do that? Like, do you still use that to practice and like stay proficient if you're not flying?
Yeah, so I've definitely one thing I've done, and one thing I've found has been really beneficial for me is, so I mean there's the new flight simulator out now, like Flight Simulator or FSX 2020. I got that right away. I saved up my money and I was like, I gotta get this game, like it looks so good and all this stuff. But you know, prior to that coming out, I just had like the normal Flight Simulator X that was out in like, I think it was like 2004 or something like that. And I definitely used it a little bit during my PPL training. Not as much as I should have used it, but I used it a little bit. And what I found helped the most is those games can be realistic, but they can only be realistic to a certain point sometimes. But that's not really what matters a ton. It's more just the visualization when you're playing the game. So there was times like once COVID happened up here, we basically shut down our flight school. And I think we were shut down for about 3 or 4 months. So I was doing my CPL ground school online during that. And I used my flight simulator like a lot in that time period just to basically like go in, do circuits, practice like what I would normally do when I did a circuit, do little like cross countries, practice what I would do on a real cross country in real life. And just going over everything like that, I found that using a flight sim helps so much. And I feel like in today's society and stuff, like visualizing things can take you like farther than you'd think. I've heard, I mean, even take, for example, like F1 drivers, you know, they play the F1 games a lot, and that's a lot of the time that's how they train, you know. Like I've even heard that like NBA players, they play 2K, they play those kind of games, and like I've heard from like a few interviews that like NBA players have been like, yeah, like playing 2K actually somewhat helps me and things like that. And like I think that it's good for a pilot to use stuff like this to like help yourself train, because at the end of the day too, turning on a computer and you know, playing a game saves you a lot more money than training a lot of the time, especially if it's just like going over a procedure or something. And that's it's so easy to do on a game like that. Especially one thing I found with like Flight Simulator X 2020 is that I've gone and done cross countries and then done them in real life just to see what the approach looks like if I'm going in at night or something. Like I'll literally just load it up on the approach. Come in, set it so that it's at night, and then just do the approach at night and be like, okay, this is how much runway I have to expect. You know, what's their lighting system look like? Going through all these different things, like it helps you with that extra preparation. And then when you actually do it in real life, you know what the approach looks like, you know how much runway you have, you know what the layout of the airport looks like. And it really does go a long way. And I know that a lot of people, I've heard them be like, oh, it's not really realistic, it's not all that. And like for me at least, at the end of the day, it's not about the realism, it's about, you know, just being able to go over procedure in your head and like be able to use it as a training device to make you better. And I mean, flying's expensive, you know, it's an expensive hobby, and it definitely pays off in the future. But if you can use stuff like that to at least save a little bit of money here and there, and you know, train as much as possible on that, then it definitely goes a long way.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I've been doing that with my
Yeah.
instrument training. I switched over to a G1000, and it's just like a whole different world. But there's so many buttons and there's so many
Yeah.
options, and you can upload your flight plan and all that. And I to not waste time, because the second I turn on the sim or the plane, or like we're doing some sim time, or we're actually in the plane. Like, once you turn that on, that plane on, the hop
Yeah.
starts running,
It adds up.
and you're
Oh,
paying
for
for
sure.
that. So yeah, you want to maximize as much time as you can, because it's definitely not cheap. But on regards to the finance side, so I know we've talked before, and I told you that I'm using my
Yeah.
GI Bill now. But how are you, if you don't mind telling everybody, how are you
Yeah,
funding your
so
training?
essentially I had some money saved from school. When I came home first from the college I was at up north, I had a little bit of extra money that I had saved for my schooling that I used. From there, I mean, you get a point, and a lot of students end up having to take out a loan. And that's what I had to do, is I took out, or I got a line of credit for my flying. One thing though, for sure, that I got into right away is just like, I just started working as much as I possibly could. And you know, having this other job at the medevac company that I'm at has been really good, because I'm basically working like over 40 hours a week now, and flying and doing all my stuff. And that's the one thing that's definitely, it can be tough, but if you're always working, and you're always like, just, you know, using as much like free time as you have to just, you know, maximize it and try to make money, it definitely helps pay for stuff a little bit more. So it's kind of been a mix for me between like using a bit of line of credit and, you know, making money from, you know, working as much as possible, and just kind of putting that into it. COVID is definitely the one thing about the flight school shutting down, is COVID has kind of helped, you know, financially, to get financially like a bit more stable than it was before, when you're just like flying all the time. But yeah, it's I mean, a lot of flight schools, a lot of stuff like that, you're putting almost like 100 grand into it. So, you know, loans and lines of credit and stuff like that definitely become the way a lot of people go. And it was the way I ended up going. You know, I don't come from a lot of money in my family or anything like that. So yeah, I basically, you know, got a line of credit, and then just worked as much as I could to just, you know, pay that off and keep going with the flying. And the one thing I would say too, that's important, is just pacing yourself. Like, as far as anybody goes, you know, everybody has different financial situations. Everybody has different, you know, they come from different walks of life, different situations, and everybody knows their situation best. And it's like, pacing yourself is one of the best things you could do when you're training for your stuff. Like, at certain stages in your training, you definitely know when you got to go hard and just like keep training as much as you can, keep going out and flying. And then there's certain stages where it's like, you know, you decide that financially you can afford like three flights a week or something like that, or two flights a week. And, you know, you just push yourself to go at that level and that pace, if that's what financially works best for you.
And sometimes you
Yeah,
need a
for sure. And
mental break.
that's definitely important too. And that's
Because
something that I've definitely learned, is like, you have to, at some points, you know, you have to take a break. You got to slow down a little bit, and just, you know, sometimes taking a week off doesn't hurt. You know, like, just focus on, you know, getting back into flying, or just save up that little extra bit of money and take a week, 2 weeks, and go back to it, you know, and just keep going.
yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. And I mean, both you and I, we work full time and it gets tough, but sometimes, yeah, that mental break is needed because I mean, I drive 50 minutes out to the airport, so it's almost a 2 hour trip just to go there and back. And some days doing that 5, 6 days in a row, it can get to you. I actually have a bunch of flights upcoming since I was gone for work for 2 weeks down in Texas. And I'm gonna regret it because I was looking at my schedule and I'm like,
It's a
oh
lot, right?
gosh. But it's all worth it. Yeah, the grind, it's worth it.
I think,
It's definitely worth it.
sorry, go
But
ahead.
so, no, go
I was just
ahead.
going to
No, no,
say, I
no.
think
What were you
one
gonna
thing
say?
too, just to keep in mind, is that, you know, flying is a lot of physical stuff to it, you know, and it's a lot of, you know, just getting up, going, taking that drive to the airport. You know, it's a lot of physical work a lot of the time too. The whole flying portion is all physical too, but the mental side of aviation is also huge. And it's something that I think is really, like, underestimated, and people don't, you know, think about it as much. But like, keeping yourself in a good mental place at all times, and like keeping yourself on like a motivated, like, mode, basically mentally, really helps with the training, really helps, you know, keep pushing yourself through. And, you know, just having that sort of like motivation behind you can go a long way from just, you know, just being frustrated, you know, just not knowing what's going on and stuff like that. Just, you know, having that like self-talk and being able to just like keep yourself motivated at all times, and just keep yourself like, you know, having that goal in the back of your mind, and like basically sitting down and setting that out for yourself, and being like, I want to get this done by this point, and I'll do whatever I have to do to make sure that I put everything I have into this so that I can get this done. Having that sort of thing behind you just pushing you is like really crucial to bring forward with your training, and just to, always keep in mind that it's a grind, but it's also a marathon. So it's like, you're not just gonna sprint from start to finish. You're gonna have to sit there and just like really condition yourself every time to just keep getting yourself further and further and further, like all the way up till the airlines or, whatever your goal is, whatever that end goal is, always being able to sit there and like just like have a lot of self-talk and just be like, you know what? Like last flight wasn't good. This flight's gonna be good. We're gonna get it. We have that goal in mind, and some things in aviation aren't always sunshine and rainbows, and it's a long road getting to an airline, and having that self-talk and being able to just motivate yourself and,
Airline job, and they say, or it's your first job working at that medevac company for flying sake, and they're like, hey, where do you see yourself in a year? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? And if you could go back, would you have done it any different way?
That's a good question, actually. Okay, let me think about that. So, getting into, so yeah, say like I'm in medevac, something like that. Honestly, I think that building hours is definitely important. And like I said earlier, it can be sometimes a bit of a hard road to get to the airlines and stuff like that. Ideally, my goal would be to get into an airline. We have an airline down in Toronto that flies right out of a city center here, and they're called Porter Airlines. I think I mentioned it on my podcast before. I've always wanted to fly for them. I don't know why. I love their airline. I love their planes. I've flown on them a few times, and I've just always been like, man, like I can see myself here. I'd want to fly here. All that stuff. So one big thing that I really want to do at some point is just fly for them. They're a bit of a smaller carrier, but that's a huge goal for me. So, I think that the medevac thing would be so cool and stuff like that. And, honestly, I wouldn't really know how to answer that one, like where I'd be in a year, because I would just want to experience that flying as much as I can, and just kind of just take it how it goes. And even with just the way COVID has affected everything, like just honestly just see kind of where the industry's at, and when it's the proper time to make the jump over to even just a smaller carrier like that, then that's when I would do it. Your second question was like, would I go back and change anything, right?
Yeah.
I would honestly answer that with no. I think that the best thing in aviation is learning for me. Because it's impossible to go and have the same flight twice. Every time I go and I fly, I never have the same flight twice, and that's what I love so much, is that everything's different, and to go back and do it over again, you'd make mistakes. You wouldn't be able to go through it and perfect it. I think the best thing to do instead of looking like backwards is just be like, what am I going to do looking forwards? Like I've come to this point in my career, and honestly, the one thing too is like I would never want to go back and do it again, because I've met so many good people through aviation, and even just having my own podcast and being able to connect with people like yourself, even honestly, like we've had a really good like friendship going, and I wouldn't have been able to know you had I not have done a podcast, had I not have tried to make some sort of aviation account and like, tried to connect with people and stuff like that. And I think that, going back and doing stuff again never means it's going to be perfect. So for me, I would probably say no, because it's just, I would just want to look forward and be like, what would I change going down the road, and what, different path would I have? And then, sorry, what was the third question too?
That was, and by the way, that was a great response to that question. If you say you're in an interview and they say, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Say you just got your commercial certificate and you're working on your instrument and you're doing some work with that medevac company, or
just say you're in an interview and they ask you, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What would be your answer?
Where I'd want to see myself in 5 years is a leader. Doesn't really matter where, just, doing something that makes a difference, in the company, wherever that company is. Honestly, like, having the privilege to work in a medevac company has definitely opened my eyes to the way things work and how, everybody has a role in a company, no matter whether you're a pilot, a mechanic, anything like that. Everybody works together, and especially something as critical as medevac, where you're basically trying to save people's lives a lot of the time by, getting them to a hospital faster than they could by car. Like, everybody who's in that operation is doing something that's helping that person out. And when you're not in medevac, when you're just in some sort of commercial service where you're, flying people around, you're bringing people to their loved ones, you're doing all this stuff. And yeah, my answer would be just to be a leader in wherever I am, and to be able to actually, like, make an impact with the company that I work for. Because, it's one thing to be a pilot, and it's another thing to be able to use that to help people and, benefit the world and make it a better place. The last guy I had on in my podcast was a medevac pilot, and he said, like, I'll never forget him saying this. He was just like, I love being a pilot, but I get to basically take my skill and use that to help, save people's lives potentially. And, I get to use something that I love to, help others and stuff like that. And I think that that's the biggest thing is, everybody has skills, and everybody has certain things that, make them who they are. And when you use that to help other people, and you use that to unite people together with their loved ones, and, all that sort of stuff, I think that that is what really makes the difference. And I think that's what makes being a pilot just amazing, is that not only are you exploring and just being able to adventure places, but you're also, making a huge difference in helping people out.
Yeah, no, dude, that's a great response. I mean, if I was sitting in their interview, and I would have been like, all right, when can you start?
Thank you.
But yeah, man, well, dude, I really enjoyed talking to you, and we'll definitely do another one of these. We should do one every time we knock out a rating.
Oh, for sure. I
Continue
dude, I would
adding.
be down. Like, it's good too to just, to go through your experience and then come back and talk about, like, what you just went through, and, what how you've grown from the last time you've talked to going through a different rating, going through a different license to where you are now.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. Yeah, we'll continue doing that and keep at these podcasts. Hopefully,
Yeah.
you and I can frequent them, because that just means we're knocking out those ratings.
Oh,
But
for sure, man. For sure.
yeah, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you inviting me on and being able to be the like the first one on your podcast. I appreciate
Yeah,
it.
man. No, yeah, definitely. Well, I appreciate you being on, dude, and you have a good one. I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, man.